The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, SiriusXM channel 158. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland, in the hizzy. Thanks again to Dustin Sweetelson.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Brown,
mm-hmm.
who both do bang-up jobs, not only on this show, but whenever they're hosting on the network. Dustin will be co-hosting a bunch of shows over the summertime, right?
Yep.
Not just this one. And Matt Brown co-hosts a Ready, Set, Bet. She does with Somich. Should probably not say his last name. Mike Somich.
Hey, Mike Somich.
Did anybody have Aaron Rye? Speaking of Somich, did anybody have Napoleon Solo in the prequels?
Not that I remember, Gil.
Yeah.
Not that I remember. As Danny tells me, we think it was involved in some exotics that we had.
Right.
But nobody was. No.
Velika had the horse that finished in second, I think.
For who? Really? For the second time now?
Iron Honor? Was that the second place horse?
I think so.
Yeah.
Oof, Velika. Love you, buddy. It's two Triple Crown races in a row.
But here's the thing. Like, again, when none of these Derby horses, specifically the Derby winner, runs in the Preakness, does the Preakness even matter to any casual anymore?
And it's what it was. Laurel Park, different track, yeah. Limited fans they could let in. I don't know. I thought that was all a little odd. By the way, you got to start making stronger contract demands. You know what I just figured out about Pablo Torre?
Mm.
10 producers work on that show.
Are you serious?
Yeah. 10 producers.
Well, it's very heavily researched.
Yes, it is. It's incredible.
What's the?
It's a little bit more than what Danny and I are doing on a daily basis.
What's that show? John Oliver hosts on HBO. That's the most like exhaustively researched show there is, regardless of whether you agree or disagree.
Great show. I haven't seen it in a while.
Regardless of whatever, if you agree or disagree with him, the exhaustive research. I can't imagine how many producers he has.
Last week tonight, right?
Last week tonight. That's correct. Kelly will effort that as Drew Dinsick joins us. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. He, of course, is the host of not one, but two podcasts, The Deep Dive with Drew and Andy Molitor. And, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with Jay Croucher. Joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. What's happening, Drew?
Nothing bad. How you guys?
You didn't have Napoleon Solo or Aaron Rye this weekend, did you? Any chance? No?
I had Napoleon Solo to run second.
You too, huh? Yeah.
Great job for him running first. No. It was a weird race. It was a very weird race. It was expected to be much faster, and that should have opened the door for the closers. It turned out to be pretty moderate pace, and Napoleon Solo was able to go gate to wire effectively. If you did not know, that was a very, very weak Preakness field. In fact, there was only one grade one stakes winner in the whole field, Gil. You know who it was? It was Napoleon Solo. Like ultimately, if you have a real weak field and there's one horse that has done it before, you shouldn't be surprised when that horse does it again, I suppose. I thought with that horse being on the early lead and expecting more speed in the race that it was going to turn into a pace melt that kind of opened the door for some of the closers, but just didn't manifest. So weird race. Ultimately, the 4,500 people in attendance, you know, one of the smallest attended Triple Crown races ever because of the Laurel Park limitations. But you know what? It didn't stop the betting public. The handle was dang respectable for a race that no one watched and no one went to see. So horse racing continues to draw a massive betting pool for these Triple Crown races. And that's good to see.
Preliminary Belmont thoughts?
It is a rerunning of the Kentucky Derby, except all of the horses who are good got extra rest, and it's a smaller field, and it's a little bit longer. So basically, this is to say the horses who, you know, if you were to take, you know, like, let's toss six or seven horses who really don't have a chance to win the Kentucky Derby out of the pool here and just rerun the race. With the All-Stars, that's effectively what the Belmont Stakes is going to be. Right now, we're expecting surely Golden Tempo will be back. Golden Tempo, of course, is, as everybody remembers, is a bomb of a deep closer. With a mile and a quarter now stretching out to a mile and a half, you would expect that should continue to play into his strengths. That said, I would be somewhat shocked if Golden Tempo is your favorite for the Belmont Stakes. He really kind of took advantage of the pace issues in the Derby, as well as kind of getting a pretty solid trip. You have a horse who is probably a better closer than Golden Tempo in Renegade in the field for this one. And Renegade did not get a solid trip. I think everybody remembers the replay of the opening there where eight horses crashed into Renegade, pushed him into the rail. out of the gate there at Churchill Downs. And if, assuming that Renegade draws a better, you know, a better breaking position, I would expect that he goes off as your favorite for this race. It's going to be tough for me not to bet on Chief Wallaby again, just because I still think he wants this type of distance. And I have faith in Bill Mott having a horse ready for a mile and a half type of a race. In general, also less, you know, with less, you know, fewer horses in the field, fewer shenanigans in terms of catching a good trip. I think that sets up better for Wallaby as well. So Commandment will be there. He'll be a factor. And that kind of rounds out. I think it's going to be a Renegade, Commandment, Wallaby in some order in the top three.
Belmont, June 6th at Saratoga this year to tennis. We talked about Yannick Sinner in the absence of Carlitos Alcaraz in the French Open. That begins next week. The draw is on Thursday, Drew. Drew and Zach joining me for a Beating the Book French Open podcast betting preview on Thursday, right after the draw is announced. Drew and I have actually done the French pod while the draw is being announced, which was always fun. So Yannick Sinner's up to minus 310. Let me real quickly on the men's side before we get to the women's, which is far more fascinating. If Yannick Sinner doesn't win this, I don't know how that's going to happen. we can speculate. But if I told you somebody else won it, who is that person?
Man, you always ask me this. And I usually have a quick answer. Hodar? I don't know, man. Yes. Like I would put the battle for second best in this absolutely messy field. Is led by Zverev, who I would put very low confidence in him winning the French Open, but you know, he may ultimately be your second runner. Djokovic is playing way, way below his level. It's just not even playing. I don't know how he pulls together seven wins in this field. Casper Ruud, I thought, played fairly well in Rome and kind of has put together a decent run of form here on clay, which he typically does. And then you look up today, Gil, and Casper Ruud is playing in Geneva for some reason.
Yeah, what's
so
that?
Even though he put together an awesome run in Rome, he, instead of resting and kind of using that, trying to carry that form into the French Open, he's burning more fuel this week for reasons unknown. He just can't help himself. He wants to win those 250s. Rafa Hodar, who we kind of mentioned in the 20-1 range, if he's on the other side of the draw for Sinner, he's going to be a bet for me to make the final. Artur Fies at 22-1. I don't know if he plays. I would have said Fies 2 weeks ago, but his injury looked pretty serious, and he is now kind of catching a little bit of this. This is just who he is, a guy that, you know, can play spectacular tennis for a couple of weeks and then it all falls apart physically for him. So Fies, I would put a line through. Fonseca, I would put a line through. Mensik is an amazing player, but not on clay. No, thank you. And now we're down into the dregs here. If we saw somebody like Danny Medvedev at 60-1 make a deep run here, even though this is not his surface, but he just is the most professional and serious of these players, then I wouldn't be surprised either. But you know, the degree to which Sinner should be a prohibitive favorite is a little bit tough to undersell. And you know, I would actually even say this, Gil, you mentioned that in the absence of Carlos, I mean, are we sure that would matter? The quality that Sinner is playing with right now, I think he would be a healthy favorite with a healthy Carlos in this field. And that is to say, you know, there is still certainly, he has a bit of a Carlos problem, and that Carlos can make him go 4-5 sets. And then that's really where Sinner, you know, kind of physically falls apart. But he's not going 5 sets against anyone in this field, as far as I can tell you. So,
yeah,
I would put like, I think I have him in the 80 to 85% range to win this title draw agnostic.
Winner of 29 matches in a row, Yannick Sinner. To the ladies side, I'm real curious. Give us a 2-minute version of what we're going to talk about at length on Thursday. But on the ladies side, Iga Świątek, winner of 4 Roland Garros titles, is the short shot at +240, pardon me, largely because she absolutely destroyed, as she is wont to do, Cocchioretto, Osaka, Pegula, until she didn't, right? Then she lost to Svitolina in 3 sets in the semifinals. Svitolina goes on to beat Gauff in the finals in Italy. There's Sabalenka cozied up to Świątek, world number one. There is Rybakina at 8-1. There's Coco at 9-1. Svitolina's at 14-1. And then there's a bunch of others who have performed very well on clay in the past. What do you do with this group?
Well, I think the kind of the market is going to be shaped pretty aggressively off of these prices. There's no way that that's what this looks like once we get serious liquidity into this pool. I don't think. I'm not saying that Iga is not going to close as the favorite at the start of the tournament. She probably will, but there's no way Rybakina and Sabalenka are separated by that much. Sabalenka, if you don't know, is dealing with some physical stuff right now. She does not look like she is engaged at all on clay. Last year it felt like a lot of her, a lot of her season long arc was pointed towards, I'm going to win the French Open, finally get that, check that box. Not seeing her with that type of purpose on clay this year, which I think is interesting. I think she drifts significantly. I would make her more like 5-6-1. I think Rybakina should be flipped and would be above Sabalenka, even though Rybakina is starting to look like she's carrying some fatigue. The Coco Gauff number at 9-1 is absolutely bonkers. That should be closer to 4-1. She has solved some of her double faulting issues. She looks like she is peaking at the right time to make another run at a second French Open. I would put Swiatek first in terms of likely winner, Coco Gauff second, Rybakina third, and then Sabalenka fourth. And then I would draw a line there. I don't think anyone lower than that in this field has enough quality to win seven matches in this tournament. And that's kind of an unusual take and maybe a little bit contrarian take from the way a lot of people are seeing this tournament. But Svitolina with... she survived so many break chances in that Rome title, like that's not happening again. And then everybody else who I think is kind of, is a year away probably from threatening the top four here.
Post-draw podcast with Drew and Zach on the French Open on Thursday. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro. Let's talk some hockey, because it wasn't just the NBA last night that was awesome. So too was the NHL with a game 7 between the Canadiens and the Sabres. Something had to give. Canadiens trying to be the first the Habs trying to be the first Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup since 1993 when they did it themselves in Montreal. Buffalo, who hadn't been to the playoffs since 2011, could they get to the conference finals? The answer is Montreal gets it done 3-2 in overtime. They coughed up a 2-0 lead. And so it is Montreal that continues the ride. It was Victoria Day in Canada yesterday, but they don't celebrate in Quebec. That much I know. Jay Khan joins us now from Toronto in Ottawa. Joins us right now. I should say in Ontario, not in Ottawa. What am I saying? In Ontario. Joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at JayHan4. Jake, happy Victoria Day a day later, sir.
Thank you, Gil. They weren't celebrating Victoria Day in Quebec, like you said, but they were celebrating something very different, as you mentioned, with Montreal winning, and that probably went fairly deep into the night. I'm going to assume that they maybe took their holiday today now. I don't think a lot of people are getting much work done in Montreal. They love their Habs, and it was a heck of a game. And what a way to kick off the week. I know you guys were talking about the NBA game there as well. And as more of a hockey guy, I do start to dip into the NHL now when there's less NHL games that I could really focus in. The Spurs-OKC series was something I've been excited for all year. And I thought, this is the series I'm really going to tune in. I'm going to get into the NBA. And that one delivered last night. That was a lot of fun. I really was able to get into it once the NHL game ended, and I basically got a full game with how many overtimes we got. So I'm looking forward to the rest of that series.
It's going to be well. Let's start with, first of all, I said this many times before I left on vacation. First of all, Victoria Day. Can you just define that before we move on? I don't want to leave that hanging.
Well, we're celebrating Queen Victoria, but really what it has become here in Canada is cottage kickoff weekend. Now, we haven't had the best cottage weather recently here at all. It's been a very cold, miserable spring. But this weekend, we actually got hit with some really nice temperatures, some cottage-like temperatures. So really, it's kind of, you open up the cottage, maybe you go away a little bit if you have the ability to do so. And it also usually falls around May 24th this year, a little bit earlier. So the reference to a 2-4 a beer up here in Canada, we call it May 2-4 weekend. So open up the cottage, crack a case of beer. That's what us Canadians like to do really throughout the entire summer. So this kind of signifies the first long weekend of a few to come.
May 2-4 weekend. Why do we never go to your cottage anymore?
You know?
Yeah.
Got invited that one time by you, Gil, and just never again.
Like cottage?
Yeah, your cottage. Cottage. Great word.
Great word. We should all have a cottage.
We really should.
All right, let's talk about Montreal and Carolina to start, the Eastern Conference final. So I said many times before I went on vacation, I was like, okay, so the 85 Edmonton Oilers, they have the record, 9 wins to start a Stanley Cup playoffs. In those days, in 1985, it was a best of 5 to start the playoffs, by the way. So they won 3. Then they won a series of 4-0. Then they won the first 2 in the Eastern Conference Finals. I want to say it was against the Blackhawks. Don't hold me to that. They ended up going like 15-3, I think, the whole way through. A Gretzky-led Oilers team, a famous team, of course. Jari Kurri, everybody else. So that was an epic team. Carolina is 8-0. With a win in Game 1, they will match the 85 Oilers with 9 straight wins to begin the playoffs. If I came to you from the future and I said, hey, this Carolina-Colorado collision course, which looks like it's going to happen, but it didn't. If I come to you from the future and I say one of these teams got beat, is it more likely, in your opinion, that Montreal beats Carolina or that the Vegas Golden Knights beat the Colorado Avalanche?
This is a great question, Gil. I've asked this to a lot of people that have come on my show over the last week or so, and I think the resounding answer seems to be the Vegas Golden Knights, that they're the team that can throw a wrench into this because they have the experience, because some of this group has won a Stanley Cup before. I would take the other side. I would say that the Montreal Canadiens could actually pose the biggest threat to throwing this all off, and my reasoning is simply goaltending and Jakub Dobish and what he's been able to do. We watched what he did last night in that Game 7 against Buffalo, Game 7 against Tampa as well, and really just the entirety of the playoffs. Now, Carolina is getting even better goaltending from Frederik Andersen, and that's why I still like Carolina in this series. They're priced the way they are for a reason, and the Canes were my cup pick at the start, and I'm not wavering off of that, but if I'm trying to create an answer to your question as to who could maybe pull off that upset, I think an all-time goaltending performance from Jakub Dobish is the one way that Montreal can win this series. They're not going to be playing much in Carolina's end whatsoever. It's going to have to take 30-plus saves from Dobish every single game. He's shown me he's capable of maybe frustrating some teams. Now, Carolina's a different animal, so that would be my answer, Gil. I think a goaltending performance for Dobish, a frustrating Carolina, stealing a couple games, and maybe making the Canes chase the series for once would be the path I would paint for the Habs to pull off the upset here.
For the Golden Knights fans here in town in Las Vegas, what has to happen for them to overcome Colorado? What happens in that series if they do so?
I would reference goaltending again. I don't think they need Carter Hart quite to steal the series the way that Dobish would have to. I just think that they need him to play solid. I would say above average goaltending from Carter Hart, because Vegas does have many weapons up and down their lineup. And we saw what Mitch Marner has been able to do. He comes over from Toronto last year, and you know, much has always been made about his playoff struggles. Now, the Pacific Division is a lot different than what he was playing in Toronto, and some of the beasts that he had to go through in the Atlantic Division. So he feasts on Utah, he feasts on Anaheim. Colorado is going to be his stiffest test, but if he keeps playing the way he's playing and Vegas gets contributions from Jack Eichel and Dorofeev and some of their other top players, I think this could be a longer series. I still think cream rises to the top and Colorado finds a way to make it through and win this. So look, there's a path here for both underdogs, guys. I'm not backing it at the pre-series number, because I do think that we are headed towards a Colorado-Carolina final, but as we know in sports, guys, this rarely works in straight lines. So would we be surprised if we're sitting here a week later and we're going, wow, Vegas is up 2-1 in this series, or Montreal's up 2-1 in their series? I don't think any of us would be overly shocked.
Both Colorado and Carolina exactly -260 series favorites, +215 on the comeback for the two dogs, Golden Knights and the Canadiens. By the way, one question, this is the most burning question of them all on Twitter, because I've wondered the same. This is from Mark Gupta. Can you ask Jake what is proper, Montreal or Montreal? Americans want to know.
I go with Montreal. That's always how I've said it. Now, I could be wrong on that, but as a Canadian, that's how I've always said it. That's how I've always heard it up here.
All right, two closing questions. Do we have a Conn Smythe pick yet at this point? Anything? Has that changed at all?
Obviously, it's going to depend on who ends up winning the Stanley Cup here, guys. Carolina is the team I still really like in this position. Frederick Anderson's been terrific between the pipes. You look at his underlying numbers, but Logan Stankoven seems to score every single game. Colorado, you could look at a few different options right now. One thing to remember when betting this market, if you do want to jump into the Conn Smythe, you might look at it and say, well, it's a wrap. This guy's doing this. This guy's doing this. There is a lot of recency bias in this award, and we're only 8 wins of a possible 16 wins to win a Stanley Cup for these teams. So a lot can happen between now and then. You could see someone from the middle to maybe back end of the board jump up, have a really good conference final, really good Stanley Cup final, and take the award. It's happened many times in the past.
Connor McDavid, last player not to win the Cup to win the Conn Smythe back in 2024. Real quick before you go, because we're not letting you get away without a play here. World hockey, you have a play on Slovenia? Is that true?
World championships. I've been loving it, guys. I love my daytime sports. I like when this tournament is on. There's a couple games on right now. Let's a little sprinkle on Slovenia +2.5 against Slovakia later. The age-old rivalry, Slovenia-Slovakia. We got to get a little action on that.
Listen, we've said it a lot on this show. When Slovenia plays Slovakia, throw out the record.
Yeah.
Say it all the time.
We're watching. Yeah.
Jake, appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Love talking to you guys. Have a great week.
Jake Hahn, everybody, co-host on The Point and the fantasy hockey show SiriusXM NHL. Coming back, let's talk some MLB. Mark Borchardt joins us. Base Winner, at Base Winner on Twitter. BaseWinner.com is where you can find all his stuff. The BetUS baseball betting show weekdays. He joins us now from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Mark, what's happening?
I'm doing good, Gil. It's been kind of a fun season for me, actually. Not results wise. Results have been bad, but I think just from seeing the, the ABS is good. I think that they could probably improve it a little bit. But I like that there's not just one or two teams. I think it's wide open in a lot of the divisions, Gil.
ABS is interesting. I've mentioned Patrick Bailey a couple times on this show. The Giants traded Patrick Bailey to the Guardians. One of his, he just couldn't hit. I mean, he had this weird thing where he was a great clutch hitter. Like in the most clutch moments, he was still good, but he just overall couldn't hit anymore. But his big talent was defense, right? Throwing out runners heading into second, but also his framing was bar none, the best. It kind of diminishes that a little bit, right? Framing is kind of diminished. And so the Giants put all that in the wash and like, well, we got to trade him. Plus we got this kid that's going to be awesome at catcher anyway. So they made that move. So it has implications, right? With a player.
Yeah, for sure. But it's not a catch all be all. There's still, when we went over the Bill Miller stats, I thought that was pretty interesting that Bill Miller, even with the ABS, is still the league's top five under umpires from a strikeout walk percentage. And then if you look at the number of challenges, I thought this was really interesting. So there's been 2,000 challenges or something, and 54% of them get overturned and 46% don't. So that means it's a coin flip on every challenge. As good as these guys are, you figure if you're a major league catcher, you can probably tell as good as the next guy. But that's how close the stuff is. It's a 50-50 call with these challenges. I thought that was super interesting, Gil.
It's 50-50, but you have to break it down further, right? When it's the pitcher. When it's the catcher making the challenge, when it's the pitcher making the challenge, when it's the batter making the challenge, that there's a breakdown of that as well. So that'll be interesting over time to see how those percentages sort of shake out. I'm curious here before we get to your picks on the day. Couple questions. Tampa Bay Rays are the best team in baseball, record-wise. Did you have any inkling of this, Mark? Did your pre-flop numbers suggest any of this to you?
No, I was Yankees and Blue Jays strong. I'm trying to think of where they're at right now from the, because I ran the Sims today, and I'm still looking at the Yankees with a 70% chance of winning that division. Tampa Bay's the second one of 25%. So however that shakes up in the market, I don't know what is the pricing for the Yankees?
-190. Right, -190.
Yeah, that's a good play. I think what is 70% to a money line -233. So yeah, that's a pretty good play still. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yankees 3 games behind the Rays again, just over a quarter of the way through the Major League Baseball season. Blue Jays, Orioles, and Red Sox, not even close. Okay. I'm curious about the AL West. So I go back, you know, the AL West right now, Mark, five teams, none of whom are 500, right? They're all sub 500. And I don't know if you remember this, because we, you and I are of a certain age where you might. 1994, the strike year, the year that there was no World Series played. One of the big sort of, I don't know, laments about that, besides the World Series not being played, right, and baseball going into the toilet for some time. You know, there was lots of things. There was guys that were going to perhaps break Roger Maris's record. There was a lot of things that were going on that, you know, we never knew how that was going to end up, because the game was stopped after about 120 games, roughly. But one of the big things in 1994 was, I don't know if you remember this, the American League West was terrible. And the team that led the West in 1994 when they called the season was the Texas Rangers. The Texas Rangers were 10 games below 500, and they led that division. Now, we're not quite there yet with this AL West, where the Athletics lead it at 23-24. But I'm curious what your projections say about all these teams. I'm going to guess you still have the Mariners winning this, but I don't know. Tell us.
It's actually a good question, because it's all pretty jumbled up. In fact, I do have the Mariners, but a 34.6% chance to win. And I think it's a little bit higher. That there's, I didn't make the adjustment. You know, they took Rally out of the lineup, and I think those simulations have him out on the lineup for longer than they should, actually. But even say that's 40%, you know, I have the A's at 22%, which that would give them plus 355. And I thought that that was an interesting look there, because they're 475.
Yeah.
But, you know, we want to talk about historic baseball. And who could forget the Bash Brothers, you know, Canseco and McGuire. I think even the most casual fan would remember that, Gil. But you know what? The most casual fan wouldn't tell you that Langoliers and Kurtz have better weighted runs created plus numbers than the Bash Brothers did in the 1988 season. I take that back. That's the season where they lost, the A's lost to the Dodgers. But I compared the Langoliers numbers and the Kurtz weighted runs created plus numbers, and they were better than Canseco and McGuire. So you got that going if you're an A's fan. What you don't have going is the bullpen. And that, so Gil, that brings up a really good question on what are these teams going to do? And, you know, the Padres and the Dodgers, you know, they're dueling, and the Padres have the best bullpen, but they're kind of lacking the pitchers. Right. So what is the new owner's going to do? Jose Feliciano, the new owner, not the singer of Feliz Navidad, not Pedro Feliciano, no relation to that long-term reliever, but I'm going all over the place. But anyway, A's have better numbers. There's two guys, better numbers than the Bash Brothers. And then it's hard to project this stuff because you don't know what ownership group are going to do. Particularly the A's with their bullpen, particularly the Padres with how they're going to spend. Yo,
plus 475 on the A's seems like a good number, though, huh, to win that division.
I think so. I think the Padres are good. You know, I did it. I think they're plus six by my sims. They're plus 614, and they're plus 700 in the market. But you gotta figure that, you know, that Feliciano guy, he owns Chelsea. He's capital. He says he's going to be aggressive. So they're going to get maybe a good starting pitcher, and that'll throw that. Snell getting hurt was a huge blow to the Dodgers. He was a top 10 pitcher for me. And it really changed the probability skill.
And these Padres games, I mean, if they have a lead, right, it's an 8-inning game. It's just, it's over, with the exception of one game this year. It's just incredible. Now, I know he let a couple base runners on a couple times over the weekend, but he managed to work his way out. But that's just the secret weapon. 7-1 is what we're showing on the Padres to win the NL West. Half a game lead over the Dodgers. What'd you land on today, Mark?
Well, speaking of the Dodgers, that's a pro lead-in, Gil. I'm going to go first five with the Dodgers. I think we talked about starting pitching, and this kind of typifies San Diego's starting pitching, a guy named Griffin Canning. It could be Giolito. It could be Randy Vasquez. But today it's Griffin Canning. I've got him a little bit worse than a league average pitcher, 12% worse. And then Sheehan's been really good. He's moved his way up to number 11 in my ratings. I don't want to fool around with that Padres bullpen. Again, you said best in baseball, and game over when I guess right now as Miller comes in to close out the ninth inning. So first five Dodgers, and then full game Philadelphia, a base winner parlay, and that's plus 170, Gil.
Okay, there you go. repeat again for us, for those who missed, real quick?
So full game Philadelphia, I guess in chronological order, full game Philadelphia, first five Dodgers, just, and if it pushes, then you push on that bet. So first five Dodgers, full game Philly, plus 170.
There it is. Okay. No side for us today, Mark. You're just going to leave it with the parlay. You want to leave it there?
I did a straight bet. I went under on the Mets Washington game. And okay. I thought that was a really high line for one of the best pitchers in baseball, and you can argue whose ratings are best, but I've got McLean number five in baseball. And then this Mets team, they're bottom five team in offense. I said, what the hell's going on with that? Well, they've lost Lindor, they've lost Alvarado, and that's how it shakes up with the way they've performed and some of the numbers that what they've done. And then Washington, while they've scored the most runs in baseball, I don't think that the advanced numbers are there, Gil.
Mark, thank you. Appreciate it. Mark Borgert, everybody, at Base Winner. Coming back with some NBA draft talk next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. One clarification. My ego number was plus 275.
Yep, a short change.
For the French Open. Kids trying to shortchange me. Knew that sounded a little peculiar. Brian M., looks like your picks were out late on the show. Need to put the blame on Kelly for not having you on time, a la Garrick Higo. It's not Kelly's fault. There was some in the, when I traveled from Miami to here, and the times that I looked at were all messed, jacked up. So that was my bad.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. We'll see. I mean, up a break in the third on Arango. See if she can get home. Garrick Higo. The story with Garrick Higo, are you fascinated by that?
Yeah, of course I was. You know me.
So.
Just bizarre.
So he was late for his tea time.
Yes.
His caddy was telling him, quick.
And the story that Higo said right away was the caddy had to go drop off his Trackman or some device or something, and they were going to meet at the starting tee. So he went over to the putting green to hit a couple balls because he thought they had a few minutes, but he didn't have a watch on him. He didn't have a phone on him. And no, but it was bizarre. It was one of those where you're just yelling in your head, like, stop talking. Like, stop talking, Garrick Higo. Like, he kept digging himself into a deeper hole. Like, there were moments when he brought up, like, I don't really know that it's my responsibility to be there on time.
What are you talking about?
Just bizarre things that he said. And then, yeah, he split with the caddy. He showed up at the Byron Nelson today, apparently, and had a new caddy.
Blamed it on the caddy.
Yep. So I don't know what's going on behind the scenes there, but Garrick Higo...
So what happened? You got a two-stroke penalty and missed
two-stroke penalty, which is, it's still kind of funny to me that they give a five-minute window, Gil.
Yeah.
Before you get DQ'd, before you're disqualified from a major. Somehow he showed up in that five-minute window, though, and it's only a two-shot penalty. He finished, and guess how many strokes he finished back of the lead after the first round? Two. If you had a first-round leader ticket on Garrick Higo. Yeah.
Andy V, might be that time to get Pablo back on the show. Quite the convergence of ANG topics. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
And Montreal Max, well, this is great. Just dropped by, seeing we got our man Gil back at the helm for a numbers game. So does this mean the band gets back together with Crack for Unscripted on Thursday? Yes, it does.
For sure.
Welcome back, Gil, and our friend. You were missed. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And Fezzik on Friday. We'll be back as well. Paul Carr is here to discuss some Prem. He's got a couple picks in the Premier League as it gets down to the very end. Who will it be, Man City or Arsenal? Before, of course, we answer those questions. Paul Carr watched his first NBA game last night. And Paul, I can assure you, they're all just that good. Every single one of them. It's quite the league.
Man, who knew? I would like to play first NBA game of the season.
Oh, sorry.
This is usually when I parachute in. Yeah. I have seen NBA games before. I was trying to find Tim Duncan on the Spurs. I guess he doesn't play anymore.
He stopped playing a little while ago.
I thought Durant and Westbrook were leading the Thunder, but I guess that's changed too. I don't know.
We were really, I mean, again, sort of a love letter to the game early in the show, but we didn't really, I mean, I don't think we stressed enough. Best game of the year. Let's forget bets. Best game of the year. I mean, where does it rank on your all-time NBA games? It's up there.
Way up there, Gil.
Yeah.
Way up there.
Yeah, I mean, it was spectacular. Everything about that game. And it is interesting, like, what was the point? I think the Champagne 3 after the OKC took the lead at 95-94, and then he immediately comes back and hits a splash three as the shot clock is going off. It was that was the first moment I'm like, okay, this is getting pretty epic. That was before, you know, the logo bang bang and all that stuff. So that was just amazing. So yeah, don't watch another game. You should just end it right there.
I'll stop. The Spurs won the title in my head.
Spurs won the title. Good. That's it.
All right. Yeah, that was fun.
Okay.
National title game. Who knew?
All right. Explain the Man City Arsenal status. Where are we?
Yeah. So City has two games left. Arsenal has one, and City is behind by 5 points. That means if City does not win today, it's over. Arsenal would have an insurmountable lead with just one game left this weekend. So City has to win today to push it to the final day. And then even then, Arsenal would probably need to win to guarantee. They would need to win to guarantee it. A draw could work if City doesn't win. Depends on the goal difference, actually. So basically, Arsenal would have to win on the last day to win the title.
How you guys feeling about this?
Wait, what happens, Paul? So what happens if we get two Man City wins in a Arsenal draw? What's the first tie? We have a tiebreaker?
Yeah, then it will go to Man City on goal difference because they're currently even on goal difference. And so if City wins twice and Arsenal draws, City will obviously have a better goal difference.
That's okay, right. Okay.
So, yeah. So City needs to win out and have Arsenal not win on Sunday to win the title.
Currently +43, +43. Checks out.
Big Crystal Palace fan.
I wish I could.
I always liked them.
I wish that valet who loved Arsenal so much in my building hadn't crashed two cars so I could get his thoughts on all this. But
I'm sure he's writing down ways and envisioning ways that they're going to blow it. That's like any true Arsenal fan does.
Yeah, absolutely is. There's no question. Yeah. All right, to the Prem. What do you got for us?
All right, we'll start with Man City today. We got two games today just to even things out because a couple of these teams played in the FA Cup final over the weekend. So Bournemouth, Man City. I will take the over in this one, over 3.5 at +110. Both teams top five in total expected goals per game. Just lots of goals happen in their matches. They both defensively they're good, not great. They give up high quality shots. So I think the style of this game will lend itself to goals and that City's going to have most of the ball, but Bournemouth likes to play on the counter and that's where City is the most vulnerable. And Bournemouth's been playing well. They're unbeaten in 16 straight. They're in sixth place right now, trying to push for a European spot next season. Probably not Champions League. They could get to Champions League, but it's not likely. But more likely a Europa League spot, which is still a big deal for a club like Bournemouth. So there's really no reason for either of these teams to sit back and, you know, be happy with a point. Like City gets a point, title race is over, Bournemouth gets a point. They're much more vulnerable in the race for European spots. So I think it'll be open. I think both teams go for it. I think we see lots of chances. So over 3.5 at +110 here.
All right. And now Gil tries to predict what Paul's rationale is for the next play. Ready to play that game?
Okay, let's go.
All right.
Yep, let's go.
You are taking here's what Paul's taking. He's taking Chelsea-Tottenham draw at +275. Is part of this handicap that Tottenham is in 17th place, right? One spot out of relegation. They have a 2-point lead over West Ham. And therefore, if they get in a situation where they can just get out of town with a draw, they're cool with it. Is that part of this?
Yeah, I'm done. I don't need to finish. You can do the rest of the second. No. Yeah, that's basically it. So they get a point out of this. They're up 3 on West Ham, and they have a goal difference advantage of 13, which, you know, West Ham's not going to make up on the final day. So while Tottenham with a draw technically would not be safe, they, for all intents and purposes, would be. So yeah, if this is 1-1 late, like there's no reason for Tottenham to try to go get another goal because their goal difference is going to be enough to get them through. So that's part of it. And Chelsea's just been bad. I mean, they've lost winless in 7 out of 8, I think. Yeah. Winless in 7 in a row, lost 6 of those in the Premier League. They technically still have a shot at Europe, but they're down in 10th place and probably not, you know, they're just a mess. So Chelsea bad. Tottenham, it's not like they've been playing well, but they're playing better than Chelsea is right now. So yeah, a draw is really fine with Tottenham. So I think that's, you know, at some point in the game, they're just going to be fine with that. And I'm not sure Chelsea cares enough to really make it interesting down the stretch. So I like the draw at +275.
Of course, I left that part out of my synopsis. Chelsea, not that good at soccer. I left
Chelsea,
that part out.
Bad. Really bad.
How much like shenanigans are there at the end of the season like this, though? Like if I own Tottenham, aren't I calling up Chelsea and be like, yo, bro, I don't really want to drop down. I could help you out next time. Like, let's just take a draw.
Try. I mean, Chelsea, Tottenham, both London clubs. We'll say it's not one of the top rivalries, but they also, we'll say they're not friendly in general. You know, a few years ago when Leicester won the title, Chelsea beat Tottenham. That gave Leicester the title. It was one of these midweek games, and Chelsea fans were, you know, they still hold that over Tottenham sometimes, that, you know, that was your best chance to win a title and we ruined it for you and gave it to Leicester. So yeah, given these two clubs, you know, just in general, not the best of friends. So not a lot of shenanigans, but you're always, there's a lot of vibes going on here. Like, who's got something to play for? It's just like the end of any regular season. You know, who's really going to care? Who's maybe injured or doesn't want to get hurt for a World Cup and won't even bother playing? So you're never totally sure about those things. But, you know, Tottenham's obviously going to go for it, and they're getting some guys healthy. They've been battling tons of injuries all season. They're a little bit healthier now. So we know they'll be going for it.
I love that your dramatization of that phone call started with, yo, bro.
Yo, bro. We're both rich. We own teams.
I'm sure that's how the English talk to each other. Okay, yep. Bournemouth, Man City, over 3.5 goals, plus 110. These are both today. Chelsea, Tottenham, draw, plus 275. May have to ride that one. Both in the Prem today. June 11th is when the World Cup begins. Paul, ratcheting up the excitement here. We'll get into full World Cup starting next week. Anything to add to what you've already given us? Any other bets that you've added to the...
Oh, let me see. I definitely have a few. If you can find... I got in Spain, Mikel Olazabal. If you can find a golden boot price for him of like plus 3,000 or more, there's still a couple out there. I like that. Spain's one of the better teams. You know, he's not 100% the starting forward, but if you can get that 30-1 price or something in that range, I think that's a pretty good shot because they should make a deep run. He's as good a bet as any to take penalties. So it's, you know, it's good score on good team type of thing for Spain. So he and Rafinha are the two golden boot plays that I have right now.
Okay. World Cup. What is that? It's 23 days away.
It's coming. Yeah, let's rosters go. Are coming out. Let's go.
Our summer, I mean, the NBA finals are going to be in full swing at that point. Stanley Cup final as well. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it as always.
You bet. Have a good one.
Paul Carr, everybody, at Paul Carr, C-A-R-R, from True Media Networks. Coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.